for a second. The Tarshish Ki Seitei, Perek Kofi Pasuk Zayin, it says, Lo Yakbo Tzidish L'Kas V'Bimto. Now here's the deal. The first thing that a person has to do, if Chas V'Sholom, a man dies, married without any children, then he's chayv to do Yibum. Yibum is when his brother marries his ex-wife, you know, the wife that he just, his widowed wife. Now, that's the normal process of Yibum. Not always does that happen. The Pasuk says, Im lo yachbo tzidish l'kas v'bimto, if the man does not want to take his sister-in-law's wife, v'hoz yivimto asharo v'zakenim, she goes up to the gates where the zakenim are. The Omer, and she says, Me'en yivam ilakim alakim shem b'Yisrael, my brother-in-law has refused to establish a name among B'nai Yisrael for my ex-husband. Lo ava yivmi, my brother-in-law did not desire me. The Kolton Alomi Al Raglon Pasuk Tet says she takes the shoe off of his foot, the yolk of the funnel, and she spits in front of him. The unks of Amr, and she calls out and says, "Kachi Yeseliish." This is what we do to the person who doesn't do what Chazal tell her to do. So we have to wonder about what is this chalitza. So first, the process. The Rambam explains all mitzvah chalitzas in Hilchos Yibum the chalitza Perek Dalet. He says the widow goes to Beitin in the city of her brother-in-law, wherever the brother-in-law lives, and they call him in. After speaking to both of them, they suggest what should be done in this case, if they should get married or not. And it's got to be 3 months from the death of her husband. 3 months after the death of her husband. Oh, Shmuel, that deserves a little stand-up over here. That's unbelievable. His death of her husband, his brother over there. They set up a spot where the chalitza can be done during the day in front of three dayanim who know what they're doing, plus two other people. That's to be five people. The other two people do not have to be chashuv at all. They could be anyone. Anyone who doesn't even know what's going on. Five people have to be there. They're all sitting down. They bring him a leather shoe, which has a heel for him to put on his right foot, which has straps that tie up the right leg. He and she then stand before the Beis Din and read these psukim in Hebrew. He then reads the next pasuk that he doesn't want to marry her, and afterward he sticks out his foot and allows her to undo the straps and take off the shoe, taking the shoe off his foot and putting it on the ground. Then she stands up and spits on the ground in front of the shoe. She shouldn't have eaten anything earlier that day that would cause her to have extra spit, but she takes whatever spit she has in her mouth, she spits in front of the guy. It's got to be spit so that the judges can see it leave her mouth and hit the ground. She then says the last pasuk of Kol Yisraelish in Hebrew. Everyone there answers Kolutzenau, Kolutzenau, Kolutzenau three times, and the process is over. She can now marry whomever she wishes to marry. Yes, Ben?
I assume that two other people Mishum Adim.
No, the process needs to have five. It's placed on the Gemara Yevamos and the 12th parak and the 13th parak. It's all over there. That's where it says it. Yeah.
She wants to marry whoever she wants.
She. What do you mean 3 months? No, she's got to do chalitza.
After 3 months,
she has to do chalitza in order to marry anybody else. Right. After she can't marry anyone, even the yavam, even the brother-in-law, until 3 months have passed to make sure we know who the child belongs to. Because a child, we won't be able to tell within 3 months. We won't know who the kid is. As a side note, I think that a lot of people wonder about this quite a bit. The woman does not spit in the face of the guy. Even though it says the word bifunov does not mean in his face. It means in front of him. That's the idea behind it. Like lifunov is before him. The Mesha Chochma, the Ksav HaKabbalah, the Tosefes Bracha says, you can look throughout Tanakh, the word lifunov or bifunov always means in front, not in the face itself. The Tzedokim themselves, those who don't believe in the Torah Sheba Al Peh, they only believe in Torah Sheba Ksav, they make sure. I rarely hear a Jew doing Chalitza, but let alone a Tzeduki doing Chalitza. But a Tzeduki holds that if you do the Chalitza process, you must spit in the guy's face. The guy who's saying no, not to do Yibum, must be spat in his face. But we hold differently, because it's like, Ene is the Canaan. We just need this Canaan to see it, and that's good enough. The Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Lamed Mabez, says marrying your Yevama for the wrong reason is like being together with an Erva. The child born from such a relationship would be considered a Mamzer. You're dealing with a Mamzer. So nowadays, we always do Chalitza instead of Yibum, because we assume that the guy will not be able to marry his sister-in-law for the correct reasons. Maybe he'll marry her because he wants the inheritance. Maybe he'll marry her because she's so beautiful. Maybe that's the reason why. But he's not going to marry her only for the mitzvah of Yibum, and therefore, we can't do Yibum, we do Chalitza instead. What's up, Brian?
That's the case. It's weird what the girl says.
Uh-huh. You are correct. That's what we're going to talk about. The whole process is weird, according to this. The reverse talks about your problem over here. In fact, not only that, what happens in Yerushalmi and Yevamos, Parag Yud Beis Halach above says, it's a shevach to do chalitza. It's a praise to do chalitza, because even though the mitzvah of Yibam normally comes first, since it might be done in an improper fashion, so chalitza would still be the best thing to do. In fact, Rabbeinu Simcha, when he was told there was a brother-in-law who was planning on forcing his Yevama to marry him, where the Yevama was very wealthy, and that was happening, morning, so he told the lady to spit in his face, spit in front of him, in front of people, in front of a bunch of judges, so that they would, that would count as part of the chalitza, enough to hassle them from ever marrying them together. Now, that might not be lahalacha, but regardless, that's what he told them to do. What's up?
Does the Gemara Yavamos actually mean that the child would be a mamzer, or is like
it says if. It is as if. That's what it says. The Miyamboi says, the Rambam and the Rif seem to say that even nowadays, you're allowed to do yibum. They keep us on. Now, everybody agrees, if a guy does yibum, if the brother-in-law does marry his sister-in-law, meaning his brother's late wife, if he does it, it works. Everyone agrees with that. If it happens, it works. That's not a question. There are situations like that. But the Bali Tosfos and the Rambam and the Rif both say that nowadays people can even do yibum, no problem with it whatsoever. The Bali Tosfos all say that chalitza comes first. That's how they paskin, and we do chalitza first. The Beis Yosef indicates, like the Rambam, that's the Shulchan Aruch, but in the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't say that. Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't paskin either way. The Ramah, Ramosha Isselis, without a question, says chalitza comes first, and that's why there might be a different minhag in different places. In America, in Europe, in Russia, nobody does yibum. Everybody did chalitza. Everybody did chalitza. In Morocco, in Tunisia, and in Iraq, in Iran, there were cases of yibum. Why? Because the Beis Yosef seems to say that yibum comes first. The Ramah says that chalitza comes first. So in different places, Ashkenazim followed the Ramah. The Sfardim seem to follow what the Sfardim said, what the Rambam said. That's what it seems over here. It's better to do. That they would actually do yibum instead of chalitza. There's a famous story where there was Rav Chaim Moshe Grudensky was one time on a train to go back to Vilna after being somewhere. He was extremely tired. And he's on the train, he fell asleep, and he missed his stop. He overslept his stop. So he wondered, why would a Kaddish Baruch Hu do that? The next stop, he had to get off the train and wait for the next train to come by to bring him back to Vilna, to where he would go. So he got off the platform, and he looked around, and he saw a Jewish person there. So he went over and said, Shalom Aleichem, Rav Yid. So the guy said, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom. He said, what are you doing here? What are you doing? This is what Chaim Moser said to the Jew. He said, what are you doing here? He said, oh, it's a terrible story. My brother passed away. He left a bunch of orphans, he left a bunch of his kids. So I'm going to do yibum to my sister-in-law so that my children will have at least a family member as their father. So Chaim Moser said, my friend, I'm just telling you, that's usur. The only time you do yibum is if there's no children alive. If there's no children that are there, you have children alive, you can't do yibum. That's ish esach. You can't marry the wife of your brother. He said, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Torah Chaim Moser, it says in the Torah that you should do yibum. Chaim Moser says, I know what I'm talking about, right? I'm telling you, you can't do yibum in such a case. The kids are alive. You're not allowed to do yibum. He said, you know what? The only person who could convince me of this is Rav Chaim Ozer Grudensky. If Rav Chaim Ozer would tell me that, then I would listen. So Rav Chaim Ozer said, I've got some news for you, Rav Yid. I've got some news. He told him, I'm Rav Chaim Ozer. So the guy, obviously, he did it anyway, I'm sure. That would be an ending to the story. That would be awesome. But that's no. I would assume that the guy ended up saying no, and he didn't end up doing because of that. But we see that even though, obviously, that guy was doing it wrong, the concept of Yibam still existed, and people somewhat didn't. The Rabbeinu B'chaya says it makes sense why we would allow Yibam, even though normally you're not able to marry your sister-in-law. Why Yibam would specifically be involved? Because we assume that the person who just passed away would want his wife and his property to remain in the hands of his family. He wants his wife and the property to stay where he was over here. Because otherwise, his wife is going to take that money that he made during his lifetime, marry someone else, and all the money is going to go somewhere else. The guy will want it to stay in the family. That's the idea behind it. That's the idea that you'd assume. Therefore, even though there are no children to take over his business, at least his family gets his business. If the brother does yibum, then it says, if the brother is still alive, his legacy is still there, within his money, within his wife, and it's still there. That's the idea behind it. But if he decides not to marry her, and to do chalitza instead, if the chalitza is done, it's like he died all over again. And therefore we have to mourn his death. And what does a mourner do with his shoes? You take off your leather shoes and you stand in whatever shoes, Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur shoes on the ground. Therefore she takes off the leather shoes, says Rabbeinu B'chaya, to indicate that he died all over again because the brother is not allowing himself to do evil. The Shach says that he should act as an avil or a menuda. A menuda is a guy who was put in chair and excommunicated. uneducated, and he should walk around barefoot for not being able to do such a mitzvah, showing people how he rejected the mitzvah of marrying his sister-in-law and bringing his dead brother's soul some menuchas nefesh. That's what he should do, and that's why he should take off his shoes. There's no question that chalitza should be included among the chukim of the Torah. So even though I just gave you a reason for why you take off the shoes, there's no question. This is a chok and doesn't make any sense. It's like shatnez, it's like basar b'chalav, it's like eating pig. We have no idea why this is something like that. In fact, this mitzvah is listed in Parshas Mishpatim as a chok. There are certain chukim in the Torah that don't make any sense, and one of them is chalitza. It's brought down among all the others, but the Rishonim and Achronim give some ideas to help us understand how we can get this. What does chalitza mean? What does it mean to spit and to take off the shoe? What does it come with? And that's what we're going to work on today. We're going to try to give 12 answers as to why we take off the shoe. One we just said from the Rabbein of Achaya. Here we go. The Rashbam and the Chizkuni. Taking off the shoe is a form of a kinyan. Does anybody know when you took off the shoe as a kinyan? It's a pasuk. It's a pasuk. When did someone take off a shoe as a kinyan to show that he was being kona a field?
No.
You're talking about Avram Avinu, but that's kicha, kicha misdei Avram. It doesn't say where the kicha is, but you assume it's through Kesef. But somebody took it off. No. By Rus and Boaz. Boaz gave Ploni Almoni. They took off a shoe. They used the kinyan of a shoe in order to go through. And it's the exact same thing over here. She is acquiring the field from her brother. She gets to inherit the field from her husband, from her dead husband. She gets it from the brother who refuses to do evil. That kinyan, the way she acquires it, is by taking the shoe. That's the idea behind it. That's the concept, says the Rashbam and the Chizkuni. That's an unbelievable board is why you take off the shoe. Tamei Amin Hagen, number 1003 on page 421, says, this is the way to make a kiyum. You make a kinyan, really. That's how you do it. When a person sees in his dream, this is a crazy little Tamei Amin Hagen. When a person sees in a dream a dead man taking clothing out of the house, that's supposed to be a good thing. But if the dead man takes shoes out of the house, that means chas v'shalom, someone in the house is going to die. The owner of those shoes is going to die. If you see that happen, a dead man, somebody who's already dead, taking shoes out of the house, that means that person is going to die. When she takes the shoe off of the brother's foot, the idea is to say that she's going to live. Not that her shoe is coming out of her house. She's taking the shoe for herself, so to speak. It's as if the mace won't be taking the shoe away from her. And that's it's sort of like a Kabbalistic, a showing of I'm going to live. My husband may have died, but I'm going to live. That type of idea. In number 1004, he gives another reason for the shoes. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take off his shoes when he was in the area of the Sneh. Shalom ne'alecha me'aragleha. Take off your shoes from off your foot. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was told. Yeshua was told the same thing. When the Malach saw him outside of Yericho, he said, Shalom ne'alecha me'aragleha, I believe the wording is. Take one shoe off of your foot. It's seems that the taking off of one's shoe indicates giving up yourself to Kedusha. Taking off, stripping off your physicality, getting rid of all the coarseness that you have, getting rid of all that garbage, and allowing yourself to be a spiritual being, a Kadosh being. That's the idea. In Pshat, a person who is feeling his Yetzer Hara warming up to him, his Yetzer Hara is making him do a sin, when you feel that Yetzer Hara, take off your shoes and put your foot on the cold ground. That's the idea. Calm yourself down. Cool yourself off. Thus, she's telling the brother-in-law, why aren't you marrying me? Because you think you have a taiva. Because you can't do the mitzvah properly. Because you think I'm too beautiful. Because you think that you can't do it in the proper fashion. Cool yourself down. Get rid of your taivas. Take off your shoe and put your foot on the ground and knock yourself down. Get rid of your taivas. Strip off your physicality. And if you do that, your ruchnias, you'll see that you could do the proper mitzvah over here. That's what's indicated by taking off the shoe. Telling the guy to get rid of his coarseness, get rid of his gashmias. That's the idea behind it. And Siv says this idea as well, sort of a combination with this Tamei Amin Hagen. Taking off the shoe, he says, is stripping off the body's nature to get himself ready to do Hashem's work. Normally, you can leave the shoe on and do mitzvahs. But if a certain mitzvah comes along, that means you have to take off your shoes, you take off your shoes. If you have to save someone who's drowning in a river, you kick off your shoes and you jump in and you go save that person. Here it indicates that if he won't marry his sister, his sister-in-law, that means that he's not ready to do anything for a mitzvah. He's not willing to do such a thing. But listen, I don't know how many people would actually do this, but it shows that he's missing out on something over here, and therefore, take off your shoe. You're not doing the right thing, so to speak, in this case. Learn how to do it a little bit better. Now, a purse says take off the shoe indicates an inability to move forward, as if I can't take another step. I'm stuck here, and I can't go anywhere else. You have the responsibility to finish what your brother started. Your brother did something. Your brother was making a life for himself, and you can finish it. You're unable to go any forward because you can't think of something good to do for yourself. That's a problem. That's the idea of what you're missing out on, so to speak, and what he's messing up on. That's reproach. The Chizkuni says, another reason to answer those who are fighting against the Torah, he says, she's indicating that if she's willing, if her brother-in-law would take her as a wife, I'm willing to serve him like a servant. Meaning, I'm willing to take off his shoe and do whatever he needs me to do as a wife for him. That's what she's indicating. And he rejects it. So what does she do then? Well, she took off the shoe and he says, no, I still don't want you as my wife. I guess back then, wife was servant. They were synonymous, right? But what does that mean now? She spits in front of him to say, well, I'm disgusted with you as well. If you're not going to accept me when I'm willing to do this for you, then she spits in front of him and says, I can't believe you just did that. The Rambam in Mori Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel Perek Mem Tes, says the same thing. The whole purpose of all these acts is degradation, degrading the guy, saying, taking off your shoes and like, oh, you're nothing. Spitting in front of him, you're nothing. Calling out these psukim to degrade the person. He says it's possible those were the things that they did to degrade a person back then. You know, I don't remember if anybody remembers this. George W. Bush, President George W. Bush, when he was in Malaysia, somewhere around, somebody took off his shoe and threw it at him because something that he said. Do you guys remember that? Do you remember where that was? Japan? It was somewhere in Asia. It was a Muslim country. So that's the shot. So I think this is maybe where it stems from. You know, where the Muslims get it from, this is degrading. It's degrading from here because you take off the shoe to indicate there's a problem. Now, he actually went a step further and threw it at him. I don't, you know, maybe that's another thing. But the indication, the idea that something there, says the Rambam Mori Nevuchim, that was something that showed it was something disgusting, and that's the idea behind it. That's what the Rambam says in Mori Nevuchim. The Sforno and the Ramban, actually in Bereishis, Lamed Ches Ches. Anybody know why the Ramban would talk about this in Bereishis? Think about this for a second. By Yehuda and Tamar, very good. That Yehuda, so to speak, was doing Yibum with Tamar. At least he allowed his sons to do it. And when they didn't do it correctly, he was willing to do Yibum in some way, shape, or form. Says, really, it's a Bezalion. That he wouldn't be able to finish building the house that his brother started up. That's why it's called Basi. Your wife is called Basi. And therefore, we degrade him. Again, it's the same idea that Chizkuni, the Rambam, the Ramban, all saying it's degradation. Reb Dessler speaks about it in Chelek Dalid in Michtav Me'elio, page 266. We embarrass the man publicly as a punishment. Somehow there's a tikkun for the soul through Yibum, and even through this degradation of the brother, there's a tikkun for the soul of the nifter. And he doesn't know how, but somehow there's a tikkun that happens in this way that makes the brother who passed away a little bit better for having this over here. The Panach Raz says that's the reason why in Chalitza she takes off the shoe and then there's the spitting. For this reason, she's willing to serve him, she's willing to be part of the family. Look what I'm willing to do. And when no, then I'm going to spit in your face. Very similar to how the Chizkuni says. He says that's specifically the order. I got to tell you, this Chassam Sofer, this is one of the greatest Chassam Sofers I've seen in a long time. In pshat, such an unbelievable pshat. So he says, there's two Chassam Sofers. One's in Toras Moshe, one's in the Chassam Sofer Ala Torah. Okay, the Chassam Sofer, just so you know, was a prolific writer. As if he had time, the Chassam Sofer was the Rav of Pressburg, which was a big city. A big city with a lot of Jews in it. But not only that, he was the Rav of really all of Hungary. He got questions, Shilas Vichubas, almost every day that he had to write letters to. Aside from the Shilas that he got, he was also, toward the end of his life, part of the parliament in Hungary to be able to fight for the rights of the Jews when he's around there to be able to go. So he had to go sometimes to Budapest or wherever it was in Hungary where he had to fight for them as well. He was also, aside from being the rub of the city and a prolific writer and the person that everyone went to, he also was a Rosh Yeshiva. And he had a yeshiva of over 300 bachurim in which he gave shir every day for 3 hours a day. 3 hour long shir. Now, first of all, you'd say, oh my gosh, what was that like? If you know the Chassam Sofer story, you'd want to be there for 17 hours. Chassam Sofer was unbelievable. He wrote two Svarim on Chumash, the Chassam Sofer Ala Torah and the Toras Moshe Ala Chumash. Both of them are written on Chumash itself. He wrote Chidushim on all of Shas, Chidushim on all of Shulchan Aruch, and aside from that, he wrote up all of his drushos that he used to give on Shabbosos, and he wrote up his Shalos V'Tshuvos. All of his Shalos V'Tshuvos, there are six chalakim of Shalos V'Tshuvos. I don't even know how many, thousands of Tshuvos that he ended up writing, right, that he had to write all the time. That's how great of a person. I don't understand how he slept, let alone learned, let alone did everything that he did to prepare for Shurim. I have no clue. It doesn't make any sense how much he wrote and went through. So here's what the Chassam Sofer says. The Chassam Sofer says, number one, the woman says the words, Lo Ava Yivni. My brother-in-law does not desire me, using the word Ava. But the guy says, Lo Chafatzti Lekachta. I didn't desire to take her. Both mean desire. Chafetz and Ava mean desire. But what's the difference? That she says, Lo Ava, and he says, Lo Chafatzti. What does that mean? So Ava means a desire for something, which makes sense. You can make sense of it. I desire this because it's beautiful. That's Ava. Chafetz is something which I don't quite understand, but I like it. I want to do something. That's a desire for something for no good reason whatsoever. The mitzvah here is to do Yibum with Chafetz, but not with Ava. You have to do the mitzvah of Yibum by marrying the woman because you want to do the mitzvah. Chafetz. I can't explain it, but I want to do the mitzvah. Not because I have a taiva. It can't be with Ava. It's got to be with Chafetz, not taiva. When he rejects his sister-in-law, she says, Lo Ava. You know why he's not doing Yibum? Because he doesn't love me. He thinks I'm not pretty enough. He thinks that I'm not the right person for him. His taivas are demanding something different than me. It's not because I'm too beautiful. It's because I'm not beautiful enough. That's Lo Ava. He doesn't want me as a person. He's rejecting me. If he found me pretty, he would have done Yibum. To which he answers, there certainly is Ava. And I have a desire for you, which is exactly the problem. That's why I can't marry you, because I'd be doing it for the wrong reasons. The real pshat is Lo Chafatz. I don't want to do the mitzvah for the proper reason. Ava, I want to do it as a desire to marry my sister-in-law. But Lo Chafatzti, I don't have the right desire to do so. Thus, the man's only doing it because of that. So we look at him and we say, how is it possible? You have a mitzvah which is barely ever shaykh. How many people in the world ever get to accomplish the mitzvah of Chalitz or Yibum? How many people get this? You have the opportunity to do a mitzvah and you can't do it because you can't control your taivas? What's wrong with you? We look at such a Jew and say, you have this opportunity and you won't do it? We take off his shoe, throw it away, and we spit in his face. That's how the Chassam Sofer understands it. What kind of a Jew are you that you're not willing to do this? How many times could this possibly occur? Honestly, and I'm looking at this, I don't know because I didn't do like a whole thing. I think this is one of the rarest mitzvahs that a person could possibly have. Shichacha, which is you forget to reap a part of your field, is a mitzvah that you can't do on purpose. It's impossible. You have to forget part of your field. That's impossible. You're either zilcha to it or you're not zilcha to it. That happens, right? Any mitzvah that happens to Kohanim or whatever, then we're not including korbanos because it's not shayach for us nowadays. A mitzvah that actually is shayach for us, right? That could be done. And even pidyon peter chamor, I realize, how many donkeys do I own? Like six, maybe, right? How often am I going to have a firstborn donkey, right? It's going to go through and up before, but those don't have it. This is a mitzvah that's going to come into your hands. Chas v'shalom, it should, right? But if it comes into your hands, there's a reason why it came into your hands. Fulfill the mitzvah, and you can't do it. You have to do chalitza instead. That's what the Chassam Sofer is saying. What's up, David?
It's also mitzvah.
That's a great call. They are both what we would call mitzvah. If you do the mitzvah, you get a mitzvah for it. But there's no question, l'fi that gemara and yivamis, and the way that everybody's learning, yibum comes first. Now, again, and if I'm asked this before, I know nowadays we don't even let the guy do yibum. We force him to do chalitza, so all these things seem a little bit off, and the verse is going to bring this up in a second, but I realize what this is saying.
Was it a heter, or was it another mitzvah?
It was another mitzvah. It is definitely, there was a mitzvah, a separate mitzvah of Yibum and a separate mitzvah of Chalitza in the 613 of the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam.
Right, so you just choose either one.
No, that's the point. That's the Gemara in Yivamis and Daflamit. You cannot choose. Yibum should come first.
So you were saying about how attractive, but also the learning almost a long time in the beginning, it talks about how actually if a woman's not attractive, you don't have to do Yibum.
Then we have an Eitzah Hogenes, right, if there's something that's wrong.
Well,
yeah.
Sounds like we're saying here about how, no, it's
it's not that he actually feels that way. He doesn't want her to feel rejected. So he says, no, Ava, but lo chafatzi. Yeah, that's the idea behind it. As I know, by the way, I just thought of another one. There's a mitzvah of redeeming the firstborn donkey, right? Redeeming it. What if you don't redeem it?
Kill it.
If you don't redeem it, you have to kill it with the back of an axe. So that's a hard one. Egel Rufus doesn't apply for us nowadays, but killing the donkey if you can't redeem it is definitely a rare mitzvah, which is only happening if you have a baby donkey. And then if you don't do it the right way, then you end up having to kill it by the back of its neck. So that's another one that I guess you could say over here. Now we're getting into the Kabbalah. So if you're under 30, if you're under 40, I should say, then you can close your ears, right, and scream out loud. That's perfectly fine. We are going to go through some things which I'm not going to be able to explain because, simply put, I'm 37. So I'm not going to be able to explain it. In 3 years, right, when I'm shining a light forth from my face because of all the Kabbalah that I'm learning at night because I'm not sleeping anymore, at that point, then I'll tell everybody everything over here, and I'll tell you that, oh, I can't because you guys won't be 40. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it stinks to be you, right? But it'll be great to be me at that point. Oh, so there we go. So you'll hear it. You'll need... Right now, Michael, you're the only one who's going to understand this. Shulchan Aruch Rav says, as well as the Tzvor Amor, he says, a more Kabbalistic idea is, the straps of the shoe are released to indicate the soul of the Nifter, which is connected to his wife after he dies, is going to release his hold on her. This is the idea. The shoe, so to speak, is the body. The release of the straps is a release of the goof of the dead man from the woman, even though it's coming off of the brother-in-law over here, it's released all, and that allows her to marry someone else. She throws the shoe to the ground as a tefillah that Hashem should have mercy on him, let him rest, even though he died without fulfilling the great mitzvah of Puravu. He might not have fulfilled it. Still, he should rest and everything should be good. He says they used to look at the spit. Look at the spit once the woman spat. He said the following. If the spit was red, meaning if it had blood in it, then they knew that he was being judged with dinim and gehenim. And if it was white, meaning regular, then they knew that he had rachamim and he was going straight up above. Unbelievable. This is what the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, the Baal HaTanya. The act of spitting as well is to show that she wants to get rid of the vestiges of the soul that's within her. All of the rest of the soul of her husband that passed away, she's spitting it out, so to speak. Get rid of it. She'll be able to go on with her life. She'll be able to get remarried. It's if the man and the woman still had a connection and she's rejecting it. And that's when the soul is released. Even says, this is what the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, that back in the day, they used to see a ghostly image of the dead man, the dead husband, in the room where the chalitza was done, which would disappear when the process was finished. It was that he was there, and then he was released. That's the idea. Without this process, the woman, if she would admit she would marry somebody, that ex-husband who passed away would damage the person who would marry his wife. That's what would happen. And therefore, this mitzvah is so important to make sure that when she gets remarried, the ex-husband, that husband that was dead, will no longer be a ghost who's able to affect that person over there. Crazy, right? Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. The Shach talks about it as well. He quotes the Ma'arik, the Rekanti in Midrashim, how the shoe represents the woman taking off the shoe. Is how the soul is finding its place. The brother refused to do Yibum, and so too in taking the shoe is the ex-wife, etc. The Be'er Yosef goes into this unreal stuff when it comes into this stuff. The Malbim. Malbim says an unreal pshat as well. He says the only real difference between animals and people, what would he say is the difference between them? Some people say speech. Says Malbim, there are animals that can talk. There are dogs that can say, I love you. Right? That's close. Yeah. That's really close. There are parrots. They can mimic your speech. So it's not speech. Speech is not it. So that's it. It can't be chokmah either, because animals also have a form of chokmah, right? We have a higher form, but it's chokmah. What's it between us? Our bechira. Our ability to, not kfira. No, that's big.
It's the way of free will.
Oh, okay. I'm okay with that. Kfira is a bad one. But that is part of it. Right, right. An animal cannot say no, God. Like, it doesn't happen. We can. Our bechira, our ratzon, allows us to overcome our initial instinct and make the right decision. We wear leather shoes. Listen to this, Malvin. It's brilliant. You know why we wear leather shoes? Why wouldn't we wear it out of anything else? Now, I grant people wear Crocs, but whatever. Why do we wear leather shoes? You know why we wear leather shoes? Because we're showing we're above the mindset of animals. Animals, their feet touch the ground. They don't wear shoes. We wear shoes to show we're above that. We're not connected to the ground like animals are. We can overcome the ground. ground in it within us, the taivas that are within us. We're different. We don't walk on the ground because the ground represents coarseness, physicality. We put on shoes to show that. If the ground is holy, then what do?
Take off
our shoes, like the Kohanim in the Beis Hamikdash, like Moshe and Yoshua when they met those Malachim. At that point, that's when you take it off, because that's when that land is Kadosh. No longer are you like an animal anymore. You're beyond that. You're beyond that idea. This guy who can't get over his taivas and will not marry his sister-in-law has to take off his shoes so he's like an animal. That's what it is. If the shoe shows how you're different from an animal because you can overcome your taiva, then dude, get over your taivas. Don't be an animal. Do something. And if you can't, then you're just like an animal. Take off the shoe and walk around just like any other animal would. That is an unreal malbum. Such an idea. Great idea. What? Oh, so he doesn't explain the spitting. He doesn't. He just says that to show her disgust with him, whatever it is. But he doesn't explain the spitting in any other fashion other than that. Yeah, and that's the problem. He is being honest with himself. Work harder.
And he can't do it because he is just attracted to her.
Understood. Get over yourself. That's exactly what the Malbim is saying. You're not an animal. You can get over it. You can do this. And that's what we're trying to indicate to him. You can do this. Get over yourself.
It's going
to
be harder.
Agreed.
It might not be all of us.
Agreed.
So then he's doing the right thing by himself.
I'm not saying that in his position where he is right now, he's doing the right thing. But what he should be, his level should have been higher than that. His level should have been that he can do Yibam. He can do any mitzvah if he puts his mind to it. He can't do it. Agreed. At this point, this is the best thing for him. But we're saying, but you're an animal. You're an animal. We expected more from you. Remember, I'm saying this in another way. Not everyone gets the opportunity to do this mitzvah. You get the opportunity, do it. Why wouldn't you do it? That's the idea. You're being truthful with yourself. Great. You should work harder on yourself because God clearly wanted you to do something different. That's the idea that the Malbim is trying to say. Says Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar, al derech kabbalah. When the brother rejects the sister-in-law, he's taking himself out from his familial duties. That's the chalat. He divorced himself, got himself off, and he closed the door. Na'al, as in shu, is he closed the door before the soul of his dead brother, not allowing him to be there. And that's the idea. The regal is the soul of the brother is leaving the family. His wife and his property are going elsewhere. That means that they're leaving. The regel is going out. The spit shows the disgustingness. How could he have done such a thing to his own brother? How could it be? That's how the Rabbeinu Bechaya learned it. The Magid Meisharim, Yalkut Reuveni, they all say the idea behind this idea. And again, he goes into Gogulim because why not? That's the idea behind it. There are other reasons. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll go back. I'm going back a little bit. I guess this one ends back to the Shulchan Aruch, but if the Lisa Kohen Shulchan Aruch Rav, who says that when you spit it, decides whether you go up to Shemayim or down to Gehenim, for the last 30 days, he was what? Just stuck?
Until you rot. Your soul doesn't leave your body. That's based on the Gemara and Brachos and Daf Yud Ches and Yud Tes. So until you rot, you're still there. So therefore, there's no decision of what's going to be up until that point. And remember, there's no time by a soul. So I don't even know how to indicate that either. What's up? Our caskets are, we're supposed to rot quicker. And if a person doesn't rot, then that's a great question. What ends up happening? That's not, then, when we're 40, we'll all understand.
That's why you're not supposed to be embalmed, right?
Yeah, why we don't embalm a person or mummify a person goes through, right? Michael's showing us it's going to take us a little bit longer, too. Time to get there. It might not be like you turn 40, all of a sudden you're like, I get it. It might be a little bit longer than that. Right, but for me, that whole night, I'm telling you, I better not have yeshiva that day. Yeah, what?
When's your birthday?
September 6th. Tetzvav Elul. Happy birthday to me this coming up week, and I do expect presents from those who haven't gotten me a present already. If you have got me a present, I'm not going to disaccept, but I need it to be expensive. Yeah.
So what is it about not having kids that makes a woman any less attached to her husband that way?
That is the greatest call, because the wife is considered the kinyan of the husband. If the husband has a child, then the legacy goes through the child. If there's no child, then it goes through his wife and his property. And therefore, the wife and the property that go through, that has the soul, so to speak, of the mace, so the nifter. So when it goes away, when that stuff goes somewhere else, somebody else takes the wife, somebody else takes the property, it's as if, so to speak, the soul is connected with that. Chalitza allows the soul to leave on its own and not go somewhere else, not have to be tied to the wife within somewhere else. That's the idea. Now, from everything we mentioned, it seems that doing chalitza, although it's a mitzvah and works, would not be so good for the person doing it. That's what it sounds like, right? It sounds like chalitza is not the best thing in the world to do. The Chafetz Chaim in Sefer HaMitzvos HaKatzer, Mitzvah Day number 46. The Sefer HaMitzvos HaKatzer, by the way, only deals with the mitzvahs that apply to us nowadays. There are only 77 mitzvahs HaSeh that the Rambam mentions that we are allowed to do nowadays. Out of 248, 77 are applicable to us nowadays. And that's it. Nothing else. There are 26 in Eretz Yisrael, but most of those are, some of those, I should say, are allowed. But 77 says, hey, number 46, he says, he knows there are people who refuse to do chalitza, thinking it's going to be a danger to their soul if they do it. He says, it's a grave error. Nothing bad is going to happen to you if you do a mitzvah. You can't think that way. And if you have to do this mitzvah, you do this mitzvah. But first says, there's something wrong here. And this is really, this is a fine question from before. The mitzvah chalitza, he says, is on the same level as evil. The Yavam Islamites even argues which one comes first. In the end, it paskins that chalitza comes first. That's how it paskins in the end, that Yavam, I'm sorry, that Yivam comes first, even though we can't do it nowadays. That's that. But aside from that, there are situations where you can't do Yivam. Beis Din will tell you, don't do Chalitza. If the woman is 108 and you're 27, don't do Yivam in that case. That's ridiculous. And the opposite, if the woman is 26 and the guy is 104, then you shouldn't do Yivam in that case. Why did I use those ages? Not joking. Either way, but that's that. So in that case, what, he's being punished because he didn't do Chalitza? That was the right thing to do. He did the right thing by not doing chalitza. He didn't want to do. He's not shirking his responsibility. He did everything. Says Rav Hirsch, it must be that the act is just the opposite. It's a public clearing of any suspicion. He didn't. You think that I don't have any brotherly love? You don't think I love my brother? I'm showing my willingness to do whatever I need to do to help my ex-sister-in-law. That's that. I'm even willing to be spat at. I'm even willing to be degraded. I'm willing for all that to happen so that my sister-in-law gets what she needs. That's what he's doing over here. Everything we mentioned is true. It's degrading and this and that and the other. And he's saying, and his indication is, this is what I want to do so everyone knows what I'm willing to do for my brother who passed away. That's the concept of the verse. That is a great idea that adds on to everything we've been talking about. Now, there is a great Medrash Rabba over here, but I just don't think I'm going to be able to get to it. We have 3 minutes. I'm going to stop with this. If you can look at this Medrash Rabba about Avraham Avinu, he got the mitzvah of chalitza by not taking even a shoestring from the king of Sodom. Says the Medrash, that's why we have chalitza. What does a shoestring have any shaykhis to do with chalitza? What does that mean? He wouldn't take money from him, so all of a sudden, I have an answer over here. That's from the Miami Lawyers, gives a great answer. But Tom Vidas, or Sternbach, says the following. The great Tzvi Rabinowitz of Kovno was once asked by the Reformed Jews of his town to get rid of the mitzvah of chalitza. Why? Because in the modern world, this doesn't make any sense. In modern world, we're going to tell a woman to do this? This is ridiculous. We're not going to do it. Let's get rid of the mitzvah. So he agreed to them on one condition. He said, you go tell the doctors to get rid of death, that there should no longer be anyone that dies. When the doctors do that, I promise I'm going to get rid of chalitza. I'll get rid of chalitza as well. So obviously, I said, Rabbi, obviously, right? The doctor can't get rid of death. They don't fully understand it. And they don't fully understand it. How in the world could they get rid of it? So said Rabinowitz, said back to them, you have no idea how chalitza works. You don't understand it. How can you get rid of something when you don't understand it? That's the whole point. If you can't get rid of death because you don't understand what sickness is or how it leads to death or what death is in the first place, then you can't get rid of it, right? So you can't get rid of a mitzvah just because you don't understand it. That's the idea. Just because our minds are not strong enough anymore to understand the concept of chalitza, where it comes from, and the ideas that are behind it, that shouldn't be enough of a reason to get rid of it in the first place. Unfortunately, that didn't stop them. I found this in Wikipedia. I could have done a little bit more research, but I'm about as lazy as you can imagine when it comes to doing research on the computer, so I just said Wikipedia chalitza, and I found Reformed Jews, so I figured like this. The Reformed view is expressed in various treatises written by the leaders of the movement and is adopted at the different rabbinical conferences held in Germany and in America, is that the ceremony of chalitza is not essential to the remarriage of the widow. The Philadelphia Conference in 1869 resolved that the precept of levirate marriage, that's evil, and chalitza has lost to us all meaning, import, and binding force. The Second Israelite Synod, I don't even know what that means. held in Augsburg, I don't even know where that is, in 1871, passed a resolution of the same effect, adding that, for the sake of liberty of conscience, however, no rabbi will refuse, on request of the parties, to conduct the ceremony of chalitza in a proper form. So they'll do it if the woman wants to. I am positive there is no woman who has ever said to a reform rabbi, I want to do chalitza. I'm positive that has never happened. But they are willing to do it. Baruch Hashem, they're still willing to do it if the person really wants. Now, there's two reasons why that doesn't really apply so much. Number one, they're probably not Jewish. So it's probably not that big of a deal. But number two, you're probably dealing with mamzerus, right? Mamzerus. If the woman doesn't do chalitza and marries someone, then there is a possibility that that child is a mamzer, the child that's coming from there, which will be a problem if she didn't do chalitza properly. And that's something that you always have to worry about, especially with situations like that. Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, who's in charge? The rabbis. Thank God. So they take care of this, and they make sure that chalitza happens whenever there's something that happens at some type. And I don't know if this is true or not, this was another two things, that they do chalitza on average 10 to 12 times a year. 10 to 12 times a year in Eretz Yisrael. I assumed the number was a little bit further up, but then I looked at it, and I realized, I saw, there has been one chalitza in Chicago in the last 17 years. One chalitza in Chicago. And when I say that, that doesn't mean there were like 17 chalitzas 18 years ago. It was one chalitza in the last 17 years, and before that, they didn't have any numbers for me. Rabbi Kushner, they said, Olav HaShalom, he would remember one of the last couple chalitzas. But it's so rare. It's just so rare to be able to find. In New York, they have it a little bit more often, and it happens. You'd say a dozen every single year. They'll have about a dozen altogether with different basedins and whatever, and everybody that goes around. But it's such a rarity, it's so hard to go through. The reformers lost out on the mitzvah. And that is another reason why you should not marry a reformed Jew. There's a couple. This is one of the top ones. So for those who are not married yet, if you're looking, this is not a... that's what you don't go through, because you never know. There could be a chalitza involved. Shkoyach, everybody. We'll stop with that.